Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. This is where Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi bring you the latest news and information on pro wrestling and MMA, as well as interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap with your hosts, Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi.
Good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday. It's Ringside Wrap coming to you. And, well, the boys are back in town. We got myself, Mike Sempervivi, and Les Thatcher here. Expecting snow here in the next hour where I'm at. I don't know about you guys. What's the weather like in Cincinnati right now, Les?
We're dry for a change. Colder than hell, but we're dry.
All right.
We had a few flurries yesterday, but yes, and you can have it. It's please keep it down there, too, when you get it, will you?
And, Mike, what's it been like your way, man?
Just freezing cold right now. Just fortunately have missed all of the most of the nasty rain and freezing rain and all that sort of stuff, and certainly the snow these past couple times around. So, yay for beach living. I'll take the cold and blowing wind over the piles and piles of snow any day.
Cool enough. Les, you hadn't been with us in a couple weeks. Kind of catch us up on what's been going on with you.
Not a lot, honestly. just working at the gym and, pretty much trying to behave myself for a change, Rich, honestly.
All right, cool enough. Guys, real quick, I believe I know who this is jumping in here, an old friend of ours on the network. Tim, I'm betting that's you.
That is me.
Hello, Mr. Dix. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, Rich. First off, I want to say hello to everybody. Rich and Les and Mike and to everybody out there that's listening. Rich, I want to thank you for the Christmas card. Happy belated New Year's to all. I want to congratulate Rich, Les, and Mike on the bevy of hosts that now occupy the time slots at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and on the network. Great job. Hey, Rich, great job. And very entertaining. And more in tune with exactly what the nut of Georgia wrestling history is, and congratulations.
All right, and it's been a rough time the last few months, but we finally got rolling again around the first of the year, and back into it full force.
And you've got a great guest tonight. Look forward to hearing a guy who's been at the nucleus. So, again, I just wanted to jump on board. I appreciate you taking this time, Rich, because although I've been in the weeds and enjoying being a fan again, because it's hard work for the people out there, and you guys all know this, and every once in a while, you maybe need to just step back and take a second and understand that these guys work hard. I'm talking about Rich and Mike, Les, to put forth these programs, and it takes away their ability to be a fan, and I've really enjoyed my ability to be a fan again. And so for that, I thank you, Rich, and guys, once again, you're doing great jobs, and I just want to jump in while I had a second. And,
all right, man.
And tell you congratulations.
All right, thanks a lot, man. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Thanks,
all right,
Tim.
Take care, Tim. All right, and of course that was Tim Dix, formerly co-host on the Sports Buffet with us, as well as actually me and Les doing the original Pete State Pandemonium.
Are we that old?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking. I wasn't sure.
Yeah. But anyway, so. Mike, busy weekend with UFC 126. Give us the rundown and anything that stood out to you.
Yeah, the biggest thing that stood out was John Jones, the 205-pound phenom. Now, they put this fight together with him and Ryan Bader And they were both the UFC's young guns in that 205-pound weight class. Bader, a fantastic All-American wrestler, and John Jones, who's just a freak of nature. There are guys who have come along in the last couple of years when you look at the evolution of fighters, the last really being Georges St-Pierre, where you just see him the first time and you know there's something special there, and he exudes charisma, and you could tell they're just physically and just they're at that another level. You see MMA, you know, evolving right in front of your eyes, and it's a lot of pressure to put on John Jones, but that's the pressure that has been put on him. And it was a fight that they had put together and figured, okay, one of these two is going to be the next big guy. They expected it to be Jones. It was. It was even in more dominating fashion than you could have ever believed. And then afterwards, you get your just one of those perfect sports moments, especially when it comes to anything that happens in a ring in a canvas mat. Joe Rogan walks into the ring, says your training partner, Rashad Evans, is injured. He blew out his knee. He will not be able to take his upcoming title fight against Shogun Hua. John Jones, do you want the fight? And, of course, he accepted it, but it was one of those great live TV moments in sports that was, you know, the people that saw that will be the one thing that anyone takes away from this show probably is that moment. And it was just very well done. A good show, not spectacular by any means like that. But, you know, some people would say, all right, that's two in a row for UFC. Okay, that's fine. That's two in a row for UFC that probably did, you know, at least 400,000 buys. So I'm not going to shed too many tears for him. And they have this monster show coming up in Toronto with Georges St-Pierre in March, or in April, I believe, and the Newark show outside New York in March. So I think they'll be doing okay. But it was, just for that reason alone, it was incredibly impressive and very memorable. And, you know, for me, as a guy who's followed Kenny Yamamoto's career, and I don't know if you guys had heard his name brought up at all, but he was his father represented Japan in 1972 in the Olympics. And he was a star in Japan, the likes of which you wouldn't even believe. I mean, the fighting in front of tens of millions of people watching on TV on New Year's Eve. I mean, absolutely ridiculous how big this guy's star was, and even tried out. Unfortunately, he hurt his shoulder, but he quit MMA to actually try out for the Olympics this past time around, but ended up hurting his shoulder, which ended his chances, but a big mega star. But he came to America, fights on the undercard of the UFC show, and like a lot of other Japanese fighters, was completely outclassed by a guy that he was put in the ring to challenge him, but it was a guy they were hoping he would beat to try to take a little bit of advantage of his name. And unfortunately, just like so many of these other Japanese guys, Kid Yamamoto fell with and looking very poor via unanimous decision. So, you know, this one's out of the way. We got Strikeforce coming up, the beginnings of their 8-man tournament this weekend on Showtime. And I mean, these are, I don't want to say they're CBS level shows. Realistically, another time they'd be pay-per-view level shows, but that's going to begin, and they've really ramped up the hype behind that. They've, you know, hammered New York very hard with it. So it's, you know, again, it's interesting times as far as if you have cable, it's a good time to have MMA, because if you Showtime, which there's a lot of boxing and a lot of MMA and has a lot of good first run programming on it anyway, is becoming just, you know, it really is one of the boxing fan and MMA fans' best friends.
Now, to somebody who doesn't follow Strikeforce or just MMA that much, that may be tuning in, talk about the Grand Prix tournament. Just kind of give us the lay of the land there, and how long this takes, and just kind of the history and what it's all about.
Well, hopefully, you know, if everything goes correctly, it's it's going to be three shows. And that, you know, the first round, which is being this weekend, they're going to have two first round matches this month, and then, you know, two the next month. And that's going to start it up. And basically, Strikeforce needs to do things to make themselves stand out and be a little bit different. Women fighters, you know, Dana White came out not long ago again and reiterated that he will not have female fighters on his show. With that said, Strikeforce has had them. And been very successful with people like Gina Carano and currently now with Cyborg, Mrs. Cyborg. And they've had to do things like that. And one of the things they've done is have tournaments, you know, four-man tournaments and things like that. Again, just to be a little bit different. And they are taking this concept that was popular in MMA at the very beginning, and in the early UFCs, they would have these, basically they were one-night tournaments to decide who was, you know, going to come out on top. They got a lot of shine on them in Japan, where the Pride Grand Prix tournaments were absolutely outstanding. Their lighter weight tournaments, as well as their heavyweight and 205-pound class tournaments were, I mean, they were legendary, and Strikeforce is kind of harkening back to that. And obviously you've got the blood going through it of people like Fedor and Alistair Overeem and guys like that who had competed in those Pride Grand Prix tournaments. So it's something they can do with the eight heavyweights that they have that makes them stand out from the UFC. And it is a good idea. It's a very risky proposition, because we talked about it a little bit with Snowden on this show. I love tournaments, and, like, you know, I love the Crockett Cup. I love the NFL playoffs. I love the NCAA tournament. When it comes to fighting, when it's not like karate and wrestling, you know, amateur wrestling tournaments and things like that, I think there's a lot of risk that's involved. And obviously, in Strikeforce's position, I mean, in theory, these would be on, like I said, on pay-per-view, or they'd be building up to a pay-per-view. You take that out of the equation, you can see why they don't have a real concern about guys getting hurt and things like that, because they're really not, in the best case scenario, they're building towards a pay-per-view, but realistically they're not. This is all going to end up still on Showtime, I would assume at least. But you run into the risk of, you know, obviously they want Fedor and Alistair Overeem. Those are the two biggest names out there. Those are the two guys people really kind of want to see fight, even though Fedor and Verdum, I mean, Fabricio Verdum has actually beaten both guys, and he's a great wild card in this tournament, a great feather in Strikeforce's cap. But they want Fedor and Overeem. The thing with that is, you know, they're both going to have first-round matchups first, and, you know, do you change the tournament around to have them in the second round? I mean, what happens if somebody gets hurt? You have all these things that go into it, and it's, you know, after you take out these eight guys, you're left with guys who are fighting who, and not to insult them or anything, but with the name value and stuff like that, if they were to come in and enter back into the tournament because someone else got hurt, it just kind of makes everything look kind of weak. Boxing Super 6 has been able to navigate through that a little bit, even though it's not a super huge tournament or anything like that. They filled their voids well, but, you know, they've had a lot of guys drop out of that, and it's just an inherent risk in having a tournament format when it comes to high-level MMA, and it's just, it's risky, but again, it sets them apart. They have something to talk about. You know, they had the press conference today in New York, and they, you know, they've been doing a lot of media blitzing and everything, and it's, you know, it's still a big deal. And in the first round, you get Fedor and Antonio Bigfoot Silva, and then in the, I believe the next matchup, that's going to take place, that's major, is Andrei Arlovsky against Sergei Kharitonov, which you have two Russian guys, or I believe they're both Russian, one may be Belarusian, but that's also something that harkens back to the old Japanese days, too. People, they would always have two Japanese fighters usually fight in the first round, or they would have two of somebody fight in the first round, just to get them out of the way and have, when it came to the Japanese fighters, to make sure a Japanese fighter advanced. When it came to two guys fighting against each other, it was usually just to have one donked off, and I assume that's, you know, one of the reasons they actually have this fight set up, where, okay, you're still going to try to mix it up and have as many people crossed over as possible. So you have Kharitonov and Arlovsky, and then in the upcoming matches that will take place on future cards, Josh Barnett and Brett Rogers, and Alistair Overeem and Fabricio Verdum, which is, again, that is a probably the biggest match of this whole thing. That's going to be taking place in April. And they still, unfortunately, haven't even announced a city for that yet. I'm not even sure where that's actually going to be held. If nothing else, it'll probably be held in San Jose. But unfortunately, they haven't even had that announced yet. So, but that's the biggest fight, at least so far, out of the eight that will be taking place. But it all starts up on Showtime, and again, you know, it's not free, obviously. You have to pay for Showtime, and I'm not sure how much it costs anymore, $8-$9 a month or something like that. But if you are a fight fan, it's going to be well worth it.
And who's your favorite to basically just come out at the end?
Fedor.
Looking at it right now. Fedor?
As it stands right now, it's still Fedor, and I love Josh Barnett. You know, I'm a big fan of his in a lot of ways, in a lot of other ways. I'm not at all. And he's going to be a threat. And I think, you know, his ability to talk, and if he was in a different era as far as being a professional wrestler in Japan, if he had come around 10 years earlier, it would be a completely different situation for Josh Barnett. He's just a little bit, unfortunately, too late for his time. But his mouth, I think, if everything works out, is going to get him over. Now, he's got steroid issues and issues in Nevada and California that are going to need to be addressed and that will always be haunting him and haunting Strikeforce as long as he's there. But with that said, I mean, I think he's going to end up getting himself over. And as long as he wins, he's going to have a lot more fans than he had before, at least in the United States, as soon as people hear him. And you know, because if it's not Fedor, to me, it's going to be whoever wins Overeem and Verdum. You know, Verdum's jiu-jitsu, again, like I said, he beat Overeem. He's already beaten Fedor. It was the loss Fedor was coming back from now. Again, he caught Fedor once. I got to see Fedor lose a second time before I'm going to believe that anybody other than him is going to take this thing.
All right. Les, you still with us?
I'm just hanging on.
All right.
Too much MMA too early here.
Huh? What's that? No, we got to hit
too much
story.
Too much MMA too early here. We got guest hosts to talk about.
we got plenty of things to talk about tonight. And you know, one thing I forgot to mention at the top, David Lagana going to be joining us here at the bottom half of the hour. So stay tuned for that. You're on the line right now, one of our co-hosts from the Thursday night show on the GWH Radio Network. Got Jerry Oates on with us. Jerry, you with us? And no, his line dropped off. All right, Jerry, if you're still there, you want to get back in, go ahead. Talking about guest hosts, I'm going with Bob Barker.
Yeah, I hope Barker does make an appearance somehow. They bring Jericho and Barker back just for 30 seconds of appearance on WrestleMania. But I tell you what, if it's not The Rock, I'll be very, very surprised.
You guys are looking for a cheap pop, aren't you? Bob Barker and Jericho.
Going off recent history. Just going off recent history.
I think I dialed the wrong number. I can't speak for the rest of the world, after the last two WrestleManias, I'm still waiting for something to perk my interest in this one.
Well, that's why I swear, even though it's only going to work to only a small degree, I'd be stunned if it's not The Rock. Obviously, they know they need to do something to hype this up, and you need some sort of name, and I don't know exactly what the status is of his movie by the time that WrestleMania comes around, whether the thing is going to be on DVD or released in the theaters. I'm not a big movie guy, so I'm not sure. But, you know, it's been talked about. He's been negotiating to appear on Raw. Vince said there's somebody that will appear next week. I don't know how much money they have to throw around or how much interest there is from other mainstream celebrities and the like. So, to me, it would be somewhat of a no-brainer that it would be The Rock. And obviously, phrasing it the way they said about the host portion, they'll be hosting WrestleMania, or wherever this person is would be hosting it. Obviously, it's going to be someone they want a lot of interaction with other people, and he would seem to fit the role.
Yeah, I think Dwayne would, it would create some interest, but not the kind that I think is important, you know. Because I don't see it. Well, you know, let's go back to the Rumble just real briefly, and I don't even want to talk about that whole mess, but stop and think about this. Nash got a hell of a pop, which, I've said before, there's some good young athletes in WWE, but none of them are ready to pick that company up and carry it. On their back, like Austin did, or like Rock did, or Bruno, or, you know, going all the way back to Bruno. But it also indicates that some of the people are looking for somebody to hang a hat on. And obviously, you know, they found Nash, you know, just his presence, maybe, you know, more, more exciting than some of the young guys, you know, that were in the Rumble other than him. So I just, you know, again, maybe there's no meaning to it at all, but I just found that kind of telling, really.
Was that pop maybe more for nostalgia purposes and kind of one of those things where he's not, you know, if they were to do anything actually legit and serious with him, even just a short-term run, it just seems like it would wear out his welcome a little, kind of like what we've seen with TNA.
Well, don't get me wrong. I wasn't looking for him to have a long-term program. I just meant that the response. Well, Booker got a good response too.
Yep.
But I just meant that the response, you know, was telling to me. No, although, you know, the company's done crazier things, they may turn around and put him into something high profile. I don't, you know, Kevin's got a good head for the business, and obviously physically he's limited due to injuries and his age and so forth. And you know, at some point, maybe somebody in one of these companies will figure out what to do with people like that other than try to make them do something that they're not physically able. But, no, I was just, you know, I just thought that, you know, those two guys jumped off the page. Well, maybe because they hadn't been there in a while, maybe because they weren't expected by a lot of the people. I don't know. But, again, bottom line is I have yet to hear a match that just makes me want to spend $50.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem, and it just is not like it hasn't been hinted at or been people haven't been saying this for a while. It's like, oh, God, all right, here comes lead up into WrestleMania, and it's okay, what are they going to do with the Rumble and everything? And again, yeah, Del Rio is a good move to me, you know, but that's if it was just Del Rio and Edge. Now, if you're expecting that to carry everything, that's not good. Obviously, it looks like The Undertaker is coming back. Would make complete sense if he faced off against Wade Barrett. But under the circumstances, there's been a lot of buzz over people wanting Sting. Again, it's, you know, nostalgia purposes and all of that sort of stuff. And to be honest, a 40-whatever he is old Sting, a very broken down, you know, just a guy with a lot of, you know, war wounds in The Undertaker, would not hurt my feelings to see Sting and The Undertaker in a tag match against Barrett and somebody or to do maybe go that direction with that too, because I think that would be something that would make, in a way, everybody happy. The Undertaker can continue his streak. He gets an appearance out there without, you know, hurting himself further, and people get Sting because obviously, for right or wrong, there are people that lost their minds when the 2/21/11 promo went up there and the possibility of Sting was out there for the Rumble and then having his name taken off the TNA page in the last couple of days too. There's obviously people that still would love to see Sting at least one time in WWE, and I think that's an idea that would actually kind of make everyone happy.
Okay.
Probably actually, but the problem is then Barrett gets hurt. But I guess Barrett doesn't really even get hurt by it, though, because I wouldn't expect them to do in 2 months what they should probably do with Barrett and Undertaker anyway, and that's having all that ammunition of Barrett laying him out twice.
Well, do you guys feel that Nexus or Barrett, well, excuse me, Core, it's not Nexus any longer. Do you think that's that has that strong an appeal? I mean, honestly. And again, I scratch my head. If I scratch my head at everything I saw in the business, I wouldn't have any hair left. But that whole thing where Cena put an entire faction out of that Rumble, I thought, here we go with stupid stuff again. You know, and I say this with all due respect to John, if John's not over by now, he's never going to be over. And he's the last guy that needs to clean the house, for Christ. It's kind of like, Angle going through everybody in TNA, you know, and then never got to Jarrett and stood there with his mouth hanging open and listened to his ex-wife babble. I don't see any value in that. I see none. And I don't know. I just, again, you know, guys, it's not so much – well, it is. It's who you put together, but it's how they get together and how you build in that thing. And if this is your biggest pay-per-view of the year, and I assume that it still is supposed to be, again, that, you know, that Michaels Taker return, the Michaels Taker first match, I don't, you know, that's going to be a tough act to follow, and I just don't see the pairing that's going to do it.
Well, sure, Jerry Lawler against Michael Cole, man.
Well, yeah, okay.
I have
dialed the wrong number. I'm.
I will tell you, stipulations mean anything?
Huh?
It's not like stipulations mean anything, but let's say they're able to get Shawn Michaels back in to be a referee for an Undertaker match. Is that even enough to drive anything with it? Because the problem with a one-on-one match with The Undertaker and Barrett at this point, or anybody with Undertaker, is who could actually beat him. So you have to actually splice in there something where people are actually going to believe The Undertaker's streak is in threat.
I don't think it's...
Does that help at all?
I don't think you have to stipulate anything. I think you have to actually have a physical human being that people think has that possibility, and they haven't got that person. As much as Cena's over, I don't see anybody jumping on that bandwagon. I just don't. It's just, you know, it Taker's too much of a serious character that he is. He's too much of a serious character, and John's too much of a buffoon. I shouldn't say buffoon. That's Santino's home base. John's too much of a cartoon character. And I just don't see, I don't see that as a value. I don't know. I don't think Michaels is a referee. I don't know. Because the way they shut, you know, the way they finished at the end of that match, the way they put one another over after the final bell, I just think that would be a horrible, you know, abortion to bring it back and have Michaels do anything, that would would change that. I really do. But of course I know in their history or recent years history that's not really important whether it screws something up or not. But I don't know. I just don't see the strength of this show at all. I just don't.
Tell you what, hopefully if we can end that whole thing with Jerry Lawler and Michael Cole at WrestleMania, I guess that's the rumor of what they want to do. I just want to see Jerry just stomp Michael Cole's face into the mat because he drives me absolutely insane, and not in an entertaining way. I know people love him as a heel and whatnot, but stomp his face into the ground. But before they do that, because no one will be able to do commentary, they actually call down Lance Russell. Am I dreaming way too much?
I'll take a pound of whatever you're smoking.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's
really.
It's a happier thought than anything else they might be doing with Cole.
You're talking about the Lawler thing, and I could, you know, I see a lot of value in, again, Jerry doing the right thing. I just don't see, to me, Lawler and Cole's a giveaway on a free show. I mean, that if I'm going to give something away, I'm going to give that away. And one thing that really bugged the hell out of me this past Monday was whoever the idiots in the back were that scripted Lawler. Jesus Christ. I mean, the promo was so far, you know, he's in a situation where he's got to feed lines opposed to just play, you know. And I've interviewed Jerry Lawler. Man, shut up and hand him the microphone and let him run. You know, and if the guy on the other side can't keep up, then he shouldn't be there.
Yeah, and I want to ask Dave about that, too, when he comes on, too. It's amazing where they're, you know, Undertaker, Rock, Chris Jericho even, they to the point with them, they give them bullet points and they say go, as well it should be, especially for those guys. Jerry Lawler, you're kidding me. Jerry Lawler, the man with one of the quickest wits, you know, around. That's the whole point of him being there, or him starting there on commentary, for God's sakes. I can't wait to actually ask exactly what is the mentality behind that. You know, there's one thing
there
about wanting everything. It's just amazing.
Well, part of the lack of mentality, I feel, is the people with putting pencil to paper don't have a clue what the hell they're writing for, or the history behind it. And you can ask Dave about that too, because if I'm going to do a movie about writers who never wrote wrestling and who are currently writing wrestling, then I'm going to have to find out what the hell they were doing before they were writing wrestling. and I'm going to have to study it, and I'm going to have to know about in detail to make my movie authentic. And then I'm also going to have to know what wrestling is about. And I think if the twain should ever meet, I think that would just – that might even make things really pretty good. Am I being a bastard tonight? I hope so. No, not really. But no, I mean that's you know, that's my feeling. You know, it is. I'm not going to invite a pediatrician in to do heart surgery. I'm sorry, it just don't work for me.
No, we're just letting you go. We're just letting you go.
Huh?
Just letting you go a little bit, letting you get it out. Rock, of course, comes out and says he's done. You know, you guys are talking, well, you know, there's always the possibility of him being the guest host. But he says he's done in terms of wrestling. Do you think how much do you believe that?
I believe it. I hope it's true. I mean, not because I wouldn't like to see him wrestle. I just hope he sticks to his guns. I really do. And I believe he's serious.
Yeah, 99% sure. I mean, look, if down the line, I mean, the movie's bombed that bad, he makes some bad investments, he ends up with like a Dermoni Dawson level, you know, owing the IRS of money or something like that, yeah, I can see him coming back. So you can never close the door on anybody. For Christ's sake, Dory Funk is in a match, or just was in a match, for Christ's sake, let alone Terry Funk, who was just in that one with Roddy Piper. You can never say no to a professional wrestler and never coming back. But he's one of those guys because of the career path that he took, and there's no way.
Let me stop you, and let me hold my hand up here. I'm not bragging when I say this. I just want to confer upon you that, no, you're wrong. This professional wrestler was asked to come back and didn't. I was offered a spot in that battle royal, and I said no.
Really?
All right.
Now what?
Yes.
For what reason? Just...
Well, because I wasn't at age 70, wasn't about to go over the top rope.
Well,
start with, and let me say they offered a decent amount of. I mean, it was a decent payoff. But my thought was, okay, if I end up hurting myself, first of all, if I hurt myself, I can't work. And as you know, I'm a personal trainer. I have to be in the gym, and I have to be on my feet, and I have to be able to move around. Second of all, the nice payday. Wouldn't have paid for the first day in the hospital.
So, and if you get hurt, and if you get hurt and have to miss work, it doesn't hurt to miss work.
Yeah,
yeah.
But right. That's
and with that, I want to talk to you more about that after this segment. But let's go ahead and we got him on the line here, Dave Lagana, joining us. Dave, how you doing tonight?
I'm good. Can you hear me all right?
Yep.
All right. Cool.
Welcome to the
How's
show.
Everybody? Thank you.
Good, Dave.
Hello, Les. I don't think we've ever met, but I'm a huge fan, so I'll just say that.
All right.
And Mike. I remember Mike. I haven't met everybody else, but I know Mike, so here we go.
Yes.
Yeah,
like,
and you're not a big fan of Mike.
Someone on here who's a bigger whore for his own voice now than I am.
Oh, I love the sound of my own voice.
I know we're going to get to soon. You know, I don't even know if you want to start with this or not. Your iWantWrestling.com website,
yeah.
You... came out with a brand new podcast called Formerly Creative.
Yeah.
And John Pierron, who had put up the blog a couple weeks ago, left WWE on his own accord, quit, decided
yeah.
to put up some of his ideas up on a blog, where it quickly took them down. We created a ton of buzz in doing it. And when did the concept for this podcast actually begin too, because obviously Brian has had, you know, during WrestleMania week, a lot of former writers and creative guys on, yourself, Corp Power, and so many others. When did the idea for this start, as far as just having an outlet where you, formerly being in creative, can talk to these other guys from different eras or ones that you worked with and just kind of bandy things about?
The idea actually came from a guy by the name of Andrew Goldstein, who I'm going to be recording after this. Andrew's a really funny guy. Big wrestling fan, and that's, I was listening before, unless you were talking about, you know, guys, like, why are they there? And that's why we had 50 guys come through that department, because I'd say of that 50, 12 were really hardcore wrestling fans. And, you know, they don't really looked into the business that well, so it's hard to write something you don't know, you know. But Andrew was really smart about it, and he, while he wasn't the best booker, he was great with characters, and he's great with ideas like this, because, you know, he, when we got together and talked, it's what people want to hear about, just like you want to hear sometimes a couple of the boys talking. But it's again, it's informative about what really is going on in that department, and where kind of the frustration lied with us, and finding a way to kind of just let that come out so people understand. When creative has nothing for you, it's usually not creative.
Now, is that the, as far as, you know, all the things that you've done, and you've appeared on a lot of shows and starting up your site and everything too, what's, when you run across guys that, you know, you obviously the whole creative has had nothing for you, I mean, how much venom have you gotten back? Because you always, you're, you know, a lot of fans asking you questions and things like that, but has there been any venomous experiences since you have left it that you could talk about? Because it's obviously, you say, you know, the realization that comes from not having to work under that system of Vince McMahon and how driving he is and how much it grates on you after a while, and you have some freedoms that come from it. Have you been sideswiped by anybody with anything negative towards you?
There's always going to be people who are negative, but it's the most blessed job you could have. It's also one of the hardest jobs, but it's also, Vince has a much harder job because he's managing his quote-unquote empire. But the issue that really kind of relies in that department now is, and has since I was even there, it all goes through one person. There's one voice. And so, you know, I had more people coming after me when I didn't have a voice, so to speak. You know, I had people, you know, who, because you're not allowed to talk. You know, if you're in that company, you don't exist. You really don't. You are a faceless, nameless person that everything gets dumped on, which is fine. That's your job. You're paid to be that way. It's just kind of like John Laurinaitis in talent relations. You know, he has an eye out for talent, but if Vince says get 6'4" guys, you know, jacked with the same haircut, he's going to go get 6'4" jacked guys with the same haircut. He's going on the directive. You know, it's funny now because, like, I don't write promos anymore. You know, working with Jim Cornette, Jim Cornette's not really ever going to hand anybody a script. Jim Cornette's going to tell them what they want to say, and the guy's going to put it in his own words. And that's how the business was born, and that's how the business had grew. You know, I never liked writing for people. I would try and sit and talk with them to understand what their voice was, but sometimes Vince would say this is what they're going to say.
Now, how many times, and let's talk about a little bit earlier, you going in, you had never been a professional wrestler, but you had been a lifelong wrestling fan. And then, saying less or anybody like that, but as far as guys who actually had wrestled and had grown up in the, you know, and learned the system from how it used to be, the conflict there with bumping heads with them and trying to make them understand that your passion, this is your passion as long as, you know, as well as your job too. Was it hard to try to get over that hump with any guys where it's like, look, I know you don't like the way the structure is set, but we can work together on this. How do you get past those things?
The system is the system, so it's interesting that, you know, breaking through the barrier of the Undertaker probably was, you know, the hardest, you know, that took years. And because so many people come through the department, it's hard to kind of, you know, get someone to trust you. And rightfully so, your trust needs to be earned. So I'm not going to hand you a briefcase for $50,000 and say, bring this back to me if I don't know you very well. So, you know, to get these guys' trust in a business that you never would trust outsiders, it was a very closed business when I first learned about it. You know, I kind of knew something was up with it when I first started watching in 1985, but I didn't know until, you know, actually I found Dave Meltzer's newsletter. That was the first time I really understood what was going on. You know, and I learned from it, and I tried to learn the business. So, yeah, but the more the talents would talk to me, they'd understand that I wasn't pitching them Spaceman from, you know, Planet Nine from Outer Space, you know, storylines. You know, I grew up with NWA Wrestling, WWF, Smoky Mountain, you know, UWF. I watched it all on a weekly basis, you know, over the formative years of my wrestling fandom.
Now, who did you appreciate more during those Smoky Mountain broadcasts to, Bob Caudle or Les Thatcher? Answer carefully.
I love when Dutch was on.
No, don't let him put you in the middle.
I love Dutch. No, I'm kidding. Actually, Dutch Vitale was the first person that I ever talked to in the wrestling business. In 1991, Dutch and his wife were on Prodigy, and I exchanged emails with them. I sent them some of the video work I was doing in my basement with two VCRs. saying, hey, do I have it here? You know what I mean? So, like, Dutch, you know, and then that's where I used to get the tapes of Smoky Mountain. And I love Les and Dutch and Les and Bob Caudle and every – that was what a pro wrestling announcer should be. They should never take away from the programming. I'm very critical on the Michael Cole thing because I feel like Michael, if he's going to be a heel, be a heel. But Bobby Heenan knew how to be a heel. You know what I mean? Like, Bobby knew how to do a positive negative, not just – I mean, he was burying people that if he's the voice I trust and he says that, then – you know, how am I supposed to understand that talent? Oh, that these guys suck out of his mouth. Well, guess what? They suck. If Dan Rather tells you some of the things really bad, you're going to believe Dan Rather.
I think that's something that's been lost. And that was always, you know, back in our time, whether it was me or Bob or Gordon or Lance or whoever, our job was to make you believe and to sell. And to do that, we had to get our own credibility over to start with. I always, you know, made the example. I said, you know, for Johnny Carson to pitch somebody's product, the people watching that show have got to believe in Johnny Carson, never mind the product. And I think that's part of what's lost with every – it seems since Heenan that everybody wants to – every color man wants to be a clown and a heel, you know. And I think Lawler and the, you know, puppies and all that crap took a lot away from Jerry. And had he been more serious as an ex-wrestler, then I think what they're trying to do with him now would be 10 times more effective.
Yeah, I mean, Lawler, if you go back and listen to Lawler back in, let's say, 94, 95, when he first went to WWF, he was excellent. But it's you're dead on when you say the puppies era changed him because he stopped doing what made him draw money as a heel. He ended up, you know, becoming a character of himself. And, you know, he's done a lot of really good work when he's motivated, but it's hard to be motivated when you're there because it's really hard. I know where my motivation ended when I worked there, and finding it again was, you know, doing the Ring of Honor show and, ironically enough, working with Mike Hogwood, who was a lot like old wrestling announcers who didn't really know much about wrestling, but they had the passion to convey it and they had the aptitude to at least understand that their job was to cheer on the bad guys and chastise the heels for what they do wrong because you are the vet, you are the fan. And if Mike Hogwood was to say, oh, I like what Roderick Strong did, and he's the bad guy, that's confusing to the audience.
Yeah, you know, now, I don't know if all three of you guys listened to Booker's initial run on SmackDown, but in closing my eyes and just listening, I thought, okay, when does Booker actually get to put words in his own mouth?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much he's produced, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, and to me, here again, he is a ex-wrestler, or current, I mean, forget the ex or the current, but he's a wrestler. So to me, what I want to hear out of him is what I hear out of Troy Aikman in football or Charles Barkley in basketball. You know, I want to hear that a little of the technical end of this. His excitement, I think, maybe because he was nervous, maybe because of his first shot, I don't know. Maybe he was over dramatizing, but I just kept feeling somebody's in his ear putting these words in his mouth. You know, and then the fact that he was an ex wrestler was blurred, and if I had just tuned in and I didn't know who he was, then he was just another guy with a microphone.
Yeah, there was no point man on that show. You know what I mean? There was no, I guess Josh is supposed to, and Cole really, and I like Michael Cole. I think he is good as, when he's the straight man, he's good. I think he's great as a heel, but he shouldn't be calling these shows. He should be a character, you know what I mean? He should be a heel manager, and commentate only the Miz's matches, because he's taking away from the rest of the product right now. And Booker, what I didn't like about Booker was he was doing play-by-play. And that's what Booker's quote-unquote strength was when he was doing commentary backstage. He would call the moves, but he says it really fast, and it's hard to understand. He needs the play-by-play guy needs to lead to him a little bit. So,
and here, we talked about this a little bit earlier when we were talking about Jerry Lawler and the scripted promo on Raw on Monday. They seem to... You know, I don't know how much they write out for him, but like Undertaker, Jericho, they've all kind of said they, for the most part, they're going to do it their way. They get the bullet points, they go out and run with it.
Lawler gets a pass from Vic McMahon as far as yelling in his ear as much as he does the other guys. He is given a pass on. He doesn't keep up with the product at all, which is probably something that hurt Booker too. But he doesn't really keep up with it when he's not there. But his incredible wit and that sharpness when he came on and became a heel announcer there, that's one of the whole reasons he's there. The Andy Kaufman thing, all of that stuff. Why did they feel the need to write out so much for Lawler? How did they make that decision where it's like, okay, no offense to Chris Jericho, because Jericho is incredibly awesome, and I wouldn't script anything from him either, but if you go, okay, well, which guy would not get the scripted promo first? I don't think I'd give it to Jerry Lawler first. I mean, wouldn't the 40 years, hasn't that proven anything? Or that kind of surprised me. How did they make that determination on how much they're going to actually write out for you?
I think it actually just depends really on the situation of the day. For example, there were some days we wouldn't get out of that agent meeting until 4 o'clock, leaving 5 hours to get the whole show together. And, you know, a writer would then have to get the bullet points together to go by Vince, you know, or get with the talent first, then go back to Vince. Sometimes Vince would want to rehearse it. You know, it all depends on the mood of the chairman. If the chairman wants it to be a certain way, you know, or let's say the talents all sit together and come up with kind of a flow of what it would be, again, bullet points, so they kind of have something in their head, then at 6:50, you know, the Lawler has to walk out in 15 minutes, Vince changes everything, and they hand him this piece of paper, you know what I mean? Like, and remember, Lawler doesn't even have the luxury at that point to have the hour to kind of get the promo together in his head. He's talking for 60 minutes before he goes up and cuts that promo. So, I don't know what situation happened, you know, on Monday night, but it's a bunch of different variables, you know what I mean? Jerry's awesome. I think Jerry's one of the best promos I've ever been, and I don't know how much, again, if it was scripted, everything there is scripted, you know what I mean? It's just the way they do it. Yeah, some people get leeway. Rock liked everything written for him, like word for word, and then he went out and did it, you know what I mean? And he would improv, but, like that's kind of it all depends on the situation, and that's how it quote unquote happens. But that's what's dictated from the top. That's the political system. It's just like in Washington D.C. There's a system, and it stinks. It really does. I don't like it. I think it has hurt creative. If it was working and their buy rates were, let's say, like UFC's, then you could say, all right, well, I don't like it, but it's working. But it hasn't worked in 5 years.
Well, how do you? Is it just through trial and error, but you know, when you apply seemingly for a creative position, it's do you know anything about professional wrestling? And if you end up showing that you know too much, we don't really want you. How as a lifelong fan, how did you navigate through, you know, knowing what to say and what not to say? Or when you were brought in, were you kind of coached up by other people or grabbed to the side and said, look, stay away from these things, boss likes this?
Well, yeah, I had some good mentors when I went in there that kind of watched out for me. There was a guy by the name of Ed Koski who is still there. He's been there 10 years. But Ed grew up in the same area as I am. We have very similar interests. So, like, he kind of was like, hey, this is how you do it. You know, when you see your spot, you know, you go for it, but you also realize you have a lot to learn. And that's how it should be, and that's how it used to be in the business. You know what I mean? Someone who was green and new wouldn't be thrown into a situation kind of like they are now. It's just, you wait your turn, you learn the system before you jump in the pool. And, you know, some guys walk in and go, for example, there was before me, the writer's assistant before me used to not take notes. He'd wait until Vince was done talking to pitch his segment, but never write down anything Vince says. Let's just say he didn't last very long, and hence how the job opened up for me. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, but yet that person will come out of WWE and said, they never listened to me. Yeah, because you didn't do your job right. You know what I mean? Before I let you drive the car, I got to at least let you be able to wash the window. You know, there's, you know, I'm not going to let you drive until you can figure out, you know, the simple things first. So, you know, it's a very hard system. It's not for everyone, that job, because there's a lot of pressure and there's a lot of very volatile personalities in there that have been there a long time. I don't agree with it. I think new voices are needed in the business. And again, sometimes pressure is put on people going in there and they're expected to be one way or another. And it's not fair to them. Everyone's good at different things. I'm good at certain things that Brian Gewirtz isn't, and vice versa. So a team to me is, and I used this analogy I think yesterday, it's not having 12 Shaquille O'Neals, it's having a team full of different guys that play different roles.
Now, you've had a
talked about it on that podcast with Brian Nanette actually appearing at the Comic-Con in San Diego, and I remember seeing that. It was there were a couple times over the past, you know, decade or so. It was when Corp Bauer got hired. I was kind of like, wow, Paul Heyman getting hired. I was kind of surprised by that too. And it just with how they, I've always heard the structure is and how, you know, everything is in there. I mean, Brian and Ed were faceless guys, but they actually went out to the Comic-Con. What was the reasoning that you thought behind that? I know they've had a little bit of a, they wanted to go in a PG direction. They the Mattel toys, and they seem to do want to do more virally and things like that. What was the reason, though, that they actually let those two out of the cage and gave them the opportunity to actually appear at that show?
I'm not sure. I mean, I was way gone, but when I saw that, I was really surprised. You know what I mean? For years, we didn't exist. For the last 2 years, you know what I mean? Like, you could tell people what you did, but they're like, oh, there's writers, you know, people who didn't know much about the business. But I don't know why. And I'm glad they did, because if they claim they're like Hollywood, yeah, those panels at Comic-Con are very important to, especially now, because people go, people shoot things, people do this, and, you know, it's very important. And viral marketing and Twitter and Facebook and any impression you can make on your brand, hopefully a good one, is very good. And finding ways, if it's a simple picture, a soundbite, again, I didn't watch much of it. I tried to watch a little bit of it. But Brian and Ed weren't alone on that panel. They were with Miz and I think Eve. It's not like they were alone and left. I don't know how the questions were structured or not. You know, I have no idea how the panel worked, but I'm sure it was very protected. So,
Dave, let me ask you a question. Since you've been in the belly of the beast, as it were, my own personal opinion has always been, if I am going to have a company and I'm going to have writers that have never, you know, been involved in wrestling in any way, shape, or form, first of all, I want some people with drama backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Second of all, to me, the way to educate them, the way to keep my product, my product would be more serious image, because I want to suspend your disbelief opposed, you know, to being the slapstick comedy side. But to me, let's say I hired you three guys and give you some ideas of where we want to go with this. Now I'm going to give you some freedom to write, but when after you've shown me some stuff, you're going to sit down with Arn Anderson and Ricky Steamboat and Dean Malenko, and they're going to shape it, and they're going to draw your parameters, and they're going to educate you into how this thing here does not fit into wrestling. However, this does. This you've taken too far. You need to back off of it a little bit. This is maybe a little too bland. You need to open it up a little bit. And to me, that's the way that I'm going to get the two worlds, I guess, to become one and to blend and to make it make sense for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, the system, and I got put in a really bad position my second year in there. When Paul Heyman was sent home the first time, it was Bruce Pritchard and myself. And Bruce was a good resource, and he had been there for a while. But then Bruce took some time off from the team, and it was just me and two other writers. And I had to beg to get somebody with some wrestling experience. Like, it was like 6 months, and you know, I was getting hammered on, you know, because it's hard to pitch The Undertaker something when you don't have a Michael Hayes on your side to walk in and, you know, with a little bit of credibility. So, yeah, the team needs structure, and it needs – that's why Ted DiBiase was brought in. That's why Dusty Rhodes, who ended up really enjoying working with, because Dusty is one of the most creative people, but he also brings a lot of credibility and past. You know what I mean? He has a track record. So – I always believe that the team needed a balance. It needed to almost be 50-50. For every writer, there needed to be someone that worked in the business and actually did well in it. You know what I mean? Like, it not just some guy that, you know, worked, you know, at a small promotion. It needed to be somebody that drew money, because people who drew money should be able to teach it.
Yeah, well, you know, and to me, I have found that over the years, when I meet intelligent, educated people who then – you know, find out what business I'm in, their view of it becomes sort of, you know, camp or slapstick to begin that, regardless of what we try to portray, that is the image that they have embedded in the back of their mind, and they're not apt to change that. And part of that bothers me with some of these writers because, well, it's not, you know, a guesstimate. I see it on the screen, you know. It's not what and again, we always had, you know, there was comedy in 1960. There was comedy in 1970, but in very small doses and at the right time. And my biggest problem with all that is that we're selling a bunch of guys as very poor, you know, comedians, because let's face it, for the most part, they're not. They're not good actors even. I think if anything, we've proven that wrestlers aren't good actors, with the exception of Dwayne. But, you know, it's just, I don't know. I personally don't want to put that I don't want that to be the image out front for me. You know, I want people to think, wow, maybe they're going to suspend my disbelief. Let me give them an opportunity to do that. And I don't even see that attempt very much anymore.
Yeah, I mean, comedy at the right time is important. How many times did Jim Cornette get a cake in the face? You know what I mean? It was done at the right
sure.
time. You know what I mean? That comedy always existed, but, you know, when shit was on, it was on. You know what I mean? Like, it was always, if done in the right place, it's important. But, you know, a cake in the face right after somebody gets heat on somebody is not the right time. And that's what I'm glad I got to at least grow up on, promotions that drew money based on serious stuff while all the comedy was there. You know, Dusty out there with a guy in a gorilla suit. Okay, that was done at the right time. So,
sure. Absolutely. Well, it's like if you watch Law & Order SVU, Munch and his comedy is inserted in small doses, mm-hmm. you know. But if we're running a trailer to promote the show, it's going to be the two lead actors out front in a serious dramatic scene. And
the hook. You know what I mean? There's the hook.
Yeah, the hook. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. There's one of the things I wrote about my site very early on, because, you know, I was listening to Lance Storm talk about The Expendables and how the movie just was like TNA. And there's a great book, and it's so true to wrestling. I've given it to a couple of the guys. It's called Save the Cat. And I will preach this book to the day I die, because it talks about storytelling. It talks about it's like a match. At the beginning of every movie, the good guy should, quote-unquote, save the cat. He should do something to make the audience like him. It's the shine at the beginning of every match. And every movie should happen. And if it doesn't, then why are you going on this ride with this guy for the next 2 hours, let alone their career? You know what I mean? If you don't know why you like John Cena, you know, if they don't do anything ever to make you like him, like, that's where I kind of feel like with Randy Orton. He does interesting stuff, but I don't know what his drive is. I don't know why he is the way he is, and I think that's kind of why the audience didn't really connect with him this year. You know, they gave him the chance to be the top babyface, but they never gave him a reason to really like him. So,
absolutely.
When did that take over? Like, because I guess somebody would say the alternate to that is look at Bad Lieutenant with Harvey Keitel or Reservoir Dogs, especially if you had not seen Pulp Fiction first. And at what point did those things of that working once or working once in a while end up never gotten away from that? TNA being the worst example of that, realistically, where it's just like, it's all of these weird shades of gray. No one likes anybody. We're taking you on this bizarre mindfuck of a ride that's not really going to go anywhere. It's just, you know, when did that, I don't know. It just drives me nuts as someone that's watched wrestling, you know, for the exact same amount of time you have. And it's sad that it, you know, as we get older, that's the amount of people that watch wrestling and that understand it, it's gone away, and we're left with this big jumbled mess where, you know, Ring of Honor being a great example of this, professional wrestling still works. It's my thing with TNA. Mm-hmm. At some point, you've thrown all this other shit against the wall, try some, like, old professional wrestling things. It's working for MMA, you know, for Christ's sake, even though they, for the most part, they don't realize they're doing it, or it's things that have been promoted through boxing and wrestling and all this other stuff for years anyway, of how to sell something. I mean, at what point did this really take off and just glob up to the point that it has, and can it be dug back out of for WWE?
Well, everyone points, oh, the Attitude Era is where the shades of gray kind of came into the way, but what are the two biggest drawing angles of the Attitude Era that got you know, the companies turned around was Steve Austin versus Vince McMahon, you know, good, strong antagonist, protagonist, babyface and heel. And in WCW was Sting's ascension to take down the evil Hulk Hogan. Those are very traditional good guy, bad guy stories. All right, those are the benchmarks of those companies, and those are what drew the money, and everything else underneath didn't matter. It's when the pieces just started to crumble around WCW when it went down so quickly. And WWE, you know, the Attitude Era obviously got pulled back a lot, you know what I mean, and you know, even more after I left when they went PG and they started naming people after soup cans. So, you know, I don't know why the people don't understand, but it's every movie is just like every great storyline. There is a great – Batman has great villains that he fights. You know what I mean? That was always the problem with the Batman movies in the 90s was – that's why they never worked for me. The villains were far cooler and better than Batman. But they really kind of – now when they resurrected Batman, they gave him a really cool story and a really interesting reason to like him and made him more conflicted, which we all are conflicted in life. None of us are perfect. If you think you're perfect, you're lying to yourself and the world. You know what I mean? Like, those are the greatest characters. And John Cena's perfect. And now, granted, they're preaching to kids, and they need to have a very wholesome character there. But Randy Orton shouldn't be perfect. And those characters need levels. But there also needs to be something redeemable in them.
Let me ask you a question, Dave. There's a show that I watch, and since you've walked both sides of the street, so to speak, I mean, you're a creative person, but you've been in wrestling and done creative work outside of wrestling. To me, the ideal babyface for this year, in this day and time, his second season will debut tonight on FX at 10 o'clock, and that's the show Justified. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it, but I know a little bit about it. But go ahead.
Yeah, to me, he is the perfect babyface. He is he's more like a Clint Eastwood of the modern era, you know, a low key. But they show his vulnerability, they show his toughness, they show the multiple sides of this guy. You get a chance to watch it. I fell in love with the show. I mean, the characters all are good. The storylines are all good, but the main guy is, to me, if I were starting a wrestling promotion, I would want to find me somebody who could duplicate him as my lead babyface.
Yeah, I mean, Steve Austin would stun anybody, but if they deserved it, you know what I mean? Or if to send a message to somebody, you know what I mean? Like, he never, you know, but that was where he's created that edge, you know what I mean? And when there are unpredictable characters and predictable situations, that's where stuff didn't work. I don't know who said it, but predictable characters in unpredictable situations is interesting. We knew what Stone Cold was going to do. You knew that Stone Cold was going to get his revenge on Vince somehow. And that's all you want to see. You want to look forward to the bad guy getting his comeuppance. You know, everyone will point to certain movies that, oh, well, this broke the formula. Okay, how much money did it make? How much money, you know what I mean? Like simple stories usually end up drawing the most money. Well, I've seen this before. Well, every story has been done. It's now in the hands of the people telling them to make them compelling. You know, our top story in Ring of Honor is the chase for the world title of Davey Richards. Pretty much the same story that's been told since time, but the talent that is telling the story is doing it hopefully in a unique way. You know what I mean? And his road is full of landmines, and how he gets there will be a very interesting twist and turn. And every stop along the way should surprise you, but should, again, build to the ultimate goal one day.
And not only are you doing that, you actually then go ahead and fill out the card with a whole bunch of other things as well, including great action with the tag teams that are going on. Mm-hmm. You're introducing new characters, which that's one thing I wanted to ask you about. Obviously,
the Bravados.
Talk about, say again?
You said the Bravados. You want to talk about the Bravado Brothers?
Well, I mean, a couple of these guys. I mean, R.D. Evans, Barrister R.D. Evans, and, you know, the Cole O'Reilly team and the Bravado Brothers and Michael Elgin and some of these guys that are now, you know, Brutal Bob Evans, and some of these guys are now starting to take hold a little bit more in Ring of Honor. I mean, the Bravado Brothers are – they seem to be the easiest ones as far as for people to get behind. I know the YouTube clip is up there on the ROH channel that they've been doing, you know, hop on board. But yeah, of those guys, I mean, who's the most exciting to you right now?
Obviously, Bennett's an easy answer there, and we've talked about him on this show before. But of those guys, who excites you the most right now?
All those guys you named, and Ring of Honor kind of went through a shift in trying to, again, make themselves financially viable. I've heard a lot of the comparisons, you know, oh, Ring of Honor is just like ECW. You know, when ECW lost their TV, that was the end of, you know, ECW. Now with ROH, quote-unquote, losing their TV, the company's going to fold. Well, now, Ring of Honor was started about a year ago, you know, made a shift to try and find younger talent that, you know, fit their budget and the system that they were doing, and they found some great talent. And Cole and O'Reilly are just a great example of that. You know, if you saw their match at Final Battle they had with Kenny King and Rhett Titus, started the show. Now, while it didn't overshadow anything, it was exactly what you want from an opening. You want a hot start that is unpredictable, and those two kids, I hate saying the word kids because they're 5 years younger than me or 8 years younger than me, but they are exciting, and you haven't seen them before. So your perception of those characters is brand new. It's not like you've seen them wrestle in TNA for 8 years, and now they're debuting with us. They're fresh on your mind. And the same with R.D. Evans, who I saw at a tryout camp, I want to say almost 8 months ago, and he looks like sort of the illegitimate son of Jim Cornette. You know what I mean? When Jimmy debuted in Memphis years ago, the skinny kid that, like, he just – but he has it. He has that look. He looks like a very distinguished gentleman. So.
No, he looks like the kind of guy you want to punch in the face.
Yeah, he's got my body, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, like, you wouldn't expect him to be a wrestler, and that's, there's one guy in WWE, not one guy, but the guy that stands out to me the most is Ricardo Rodriguez, who's Alberto Del Rio's ring announcer. He had a match that no one saw on NXT with the guy they called the Rat, which, I feel bad for that guy, but this guy knew how to work he's a trained wrestler, but he worked like a ring announcer who never worked before, and it was exactly the right style to get his gimmick over. He tripped getting in the ring. He didn't know how to fight, but he still found a way to slip over. That's heat. You know what I mean? Like, that's what that character, and that's what I see R.D. Evans. He's not a wrestler. He's a barrister, which I love that term. I'm trying to work barrister and czar into wrestling. You know, I hilariously with the barrister part, but there hasn't been a czar in wrestling for a long time. So, but, yeah, there's so much great talent. I mean, obviously Mike Bennett is the one you go, oh, well, WWE will snatch him at some point. And that – the most amazing part about him is that he never did TV before 6 months ago, and he now gets it. And I like him because he's the polar opposite of what Ring of Honor fans think Ring of Honor is. He ain't gonna do no dives. He ain't gonna, you know, he's not Davey Richards, and that's what he should be. That's where you want to see Davey Richards wrestle this guy. And when he cheats, man, they're gonna come and hate this guy.
Well, the Ring of Honor always seems to get it, you know, in a double hit. Obviously, you know, Gabe leaves. They have the guys leaving when the HDNet deal started up. You know, Claudio looked like he was gone, Nigel and Danielson and all that stuff. Now you have the shift again with the Delirious and now HDNet TV going away. There's been a lot of debate over how bad that hurts, and obviously it hurts because as somebody that watched it, you know, tried to watch it every single week. It was great TV. It was the type of TV that didn't hurt your head. It was a great wrestling show. It was entertaining. There was great stuff all the way across the board. And you weren't giving away the farm, and it made you want to buy the iPay-per-views. And there's been a lot of discussion over, well, how badly will the iPay-per-views end up getting hurt out of this? I don't think they actually will. What's your feeling on those shows? Because it's obviously more people have watched each time out, and these shows have gotten, I don't want to say they've gotten better because they've all actually been very good, but, you know, everything's getting a lot more smoother and things are just happening at a better clip. What's your feeling on those iPay-per-view shows without having HDNet?
I think it all depends on the it's the same thing. It's the attraction. It's how we expose the attraction, how we appeal to the audience. You know, Kerry has been very good to me to let me experiment with social media, you know what I mean, and getting buzz building. And we haven't really – I mean, we're still almost 2 weeks out. You know what I mean? The last 2 weeks of TV will push the four attractions we have hard. You know, I don't think we're going to beat Final Battle because that was the quote-unquote WrestleMania for Ring of Honor. But it's the start of our new year, so these are the stories that are starting. But again, the nice thing about the iPay-per-views are, and, you know, I've heard people say, oh, well, it's this, it's what's that. It's very – the break-even is so low that they're all a success. You know what I mean? And I think our company has proven, and, you know, I see these other promotions running iPay-per-views, but, you know, I don't hear even anyone talking about them once they happen. I know when our shows happen, people are going to be Twittering about them. People are going to be talking about them. They're going to be watching them. Some people are going to be stealing them, which my new feeling is if you steal internet pay-per-views, you steal DVDs, you're not allowed to have a voice in wrestling. You have no vote. You know what I mean? You can never, if you sit there and you download stuff illegally, you're not allowed to talk about it. You know what I mean? Your voice matters zero because you're not supporting these companies that really need your support the most. And that's about as passionate as I can be about that because Ring of Honor needs your support. You know what I mean? If you wanted to stick around and hopefully, you know, get back on television, you need to support it. You need to Twitter the TV stations, you know, back in the 90s, and this is something that I think we're going to work on. It just kind of came to me now. In the 90s, how did the ECW get on TV and on pay-per-view? People used to fax. Well, we live in a Twitter world. If you wanted us to be on Versus, you should Twitter Versus every day and let them know what you want because people monitor it. People listen. Citibank shut my credit card off yesterday by mistake. And I called, and I couldn't get anybody on the phone for 45 minutes. I wrote at Citibank on my Twitter yesterday, you failed me. Someone called me back in 5 minutes. That's how the world has shifted. So, you know what I mean? Like, if you want a voice and you want to support the product, you need to be as much a part of it as we are. Sorry, I got my soapbox.
Well, has it even been bounced around the idea of just because I just opened up a Twitter, you know, on Friday for Christ's sake. Mm-hmm. I'm not the most technologically savvy dude in the world, but I don't have that Meltzer mental block where I can't take my HDMI cable and plug it into my TV. Now, sadly, in my office, my monitor is actually bigger than my TV anyway, so I don't care about watching events, you know, on iPay-per-view. I'm used to it now. I have no problem with it whatsoever. With the oncoming of people buying TVs that are already, you know, idiot-proof and ready to go with the ability to stream, you know, sitting on their couch, has there been any thought to the possibility of doing a subscription for 6 months of randomly showing house shows or things like that where it could be an idea, or is that going a little bit too far right now?
Well, there's a couple issues. You know, there's manpower, there's technology, there's upfront costs. I mean, I've looked into a lot of different things for many different companies as far as what the best possible way to expose the product. And you also don't want to oversaturate the market. I mean, how many hours of WWE TV can anybody watch? I mean, you know, they don't even pay attention to NXT and Superstars. Like, what if, I'm not saying,
I can't believe you even said you watched NXT. You're one of the few.
I pay attention because they're taking, and this is the stuff that boggles my mind. They invest in these guys that go on NXT and the girls too. And that, you know, they pay these kids. They pay them the developmental fee. And this was, I always say this to Cabana. You know what I mean? They paid Colt Cabana for 2 years to be in developmental, and then they brought him up to do 12 jobs on TV. You invested. That's like buying a stock and then telling everyone that they shouldn't buy it. You know, would any right stock broker do that and then take a loss on it? Like, if you invest in a human being and you invest in talent, one, you need to invest in the right people, and sometimes you have to take a loss. But to invest in it and then go on television and the internet and tell them, well, this guy's horrible, that's just, I go, what are you doing with your investment? You're just wasting your money for what? So yeah, and there's these hours of television that tell people that this sucks. Well, what's your time wasted? You know what I mean? So we don't want to put product out that's just filler, that's not important, because, again, we're special. Our internet pay-per-views are special because we make them special. And everyone was figuring, oh, the internet pay-per-views are going to hurt the DVD sales. Guess what our best-selling DVDs were this past year? Our internet pay-per-views. And they outsold the shows the year before that weren't internet pay-per-views on DVD. So, again, if Final Battle did 1,900 to 2,000 internet pay-per-view buys, it's outpacing the year before's DVD. So that's new fans, and that's showing that as long as something's important, people will spend money on it.
You had a lot of awesome stuff last year, and I know you can't – it's not fair to choose which one of your favorite children, not to say that these are all your creations or anything, but just being there and watching the whole year go by, what was your best thing of the year? Or what was your, like, just your star of the year as far as a feud or something that happened? I know there's a lot of them. For me, it's still the Kings of Wrestling and the Briscoes, as great as the Tyler-Davey match was, and that was my match of the year. And there were, you know, a lot of other moments, but all year long with that. I know Steam in Generico too, but I love the Briscoes and the Kings of Wrestling and how all that played out for entertainment value and everything else that went into it. What was your favorite, if you can choose one?
It's hard, you know what I mean? Final Battle was almost bittersweet, and Final Battle was the first of all those shows that, you know, we were quote-unquote didn't have any huge issue. But the one before, and Glory by Honor was probably the most tumultuous day of my life. The scary part of that show was we didn't know when the computer was going to crash again. So it's like waiting for the power generator to go out. So I'm sitting there literally with every cut hoping the computer doesn't crash. So I didn't enjoy that at all. But I think that all the stuff you listed was all on one show in one form or another, and that was the Toronto Internet pay-per-view as a whole, just as far as a package and all that stuff. And the main event was amazing. I mean, everything from top to bottom, you know, everybody got over. You know what I mean? You watched it and you were proud of what you were watching. You didn't feel like your money was wasted. Like, I don't know if you guys go to a movie and you walk out and go, they just stole $15 from me. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to feel like, and this is every brand, this is my issue with Citibank yesterday, they stole money from me. They made me not be able to use my credit card for a day on their own mistake. They made the mistake, and then I had to be punished. So now when you spend a ticket on a show or a pay-per-view, and at the end of it you go, why did I just spend money? They laugh in your face. Ha ha, watch TV to find out the answer. Yeah, but I paid. You know what I mean? I paid money. Why do the people who didn't pay get the same answer that I paid for? Premium content should have a premium value, and that's kind of in the content world we're in. So for me, our internet pay-per-views paid off, and that one in Toronto is my favorite because of everything, all the stories that, again, didn't climax, but they continued, and it showed that you can continue stories but still give a payoff. That's storytelling. That's storytelling to me, is finding a way to do that.
Now, Steven Generico, I think, was the, not to, you know, obviously, it's over with now, but how guys were inserted into that last year, it just, was that, I don't know if that's been the best feud in ROH history, but of modern ROH times, it's hard to say that was not the best, and I'm looking at it from an older fan's perspective a little bit, not to make Les kind of throw open his mouth there, but the fact that the feud was built up with, they didn't touch each other. Mm-hmm. Much of the time, it was done through mouth, and it was done through them not touching each other. Is that, how much do you just look at that and go, okay, see, that's what it is? I mean, they made people believe that they hated each other, and they believed into it, and they bought into it, and you brought in Carino, and you brought in, guys on the flank, Cabana and everything to get involved in it. Can that work again? I mean,
yes.
Can they go back to doing this again in other places? I mean, or do only guys who have any sense and know what they're doing can actually do this? Because it was so good because they didn't touch each other. They built it up with you wanting to see them kill each other, but they weren't killing each other every week.
It takes one thing, and it's something, you know, unless I'd love to know your opinion as far as how it used to be, it takes patience. And the issue is, live TV is the greatest thing that ever happened to pro wrestling. Weekly live television, it's also the worst. Because now Vince McMahon can rewrite the show up to 2 minutes before it goes on the air, and you're always questioning yourself. We never questioned ourselves with that story. People will laugh. The Cena and Generico story is just like Hogan and Orndorff. Partners turn on each other, and then you wait to see them fight in various different situations. You know what I mean? Orndorff wasn't even friends with Hogan, what, more than a year? I mean, it wasn't like the biggest story, but it works because everyone understands when your best friend sells you out. We all understand that because we've all been through it. And this is always my diatribe of why the last year worked at our level. I am not saying we made WWE money. Heck, we didn't make TNA money, if they make money. But what works is stories that people can understand. People can understand Davey Richards wanting to win a world title for his dead grandfather that died when he won his first title. You sympathize with that guy. Same with Tyler, who got everything he dreamed of, and yet the people didn't respect him. These are stories that everyone can understand. People can't relate to stories, you know, that I can't even think of any of the drive. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if it's easy to relate to, if I can go, hey, I went through something similar like that, then people understand it. Think about the movies that you like and the shows that you like. You get to be able to relate to the characters and the situations they're in. You know what I mean? Like Ponzi schemes, not many people will get stuck in stuff like that. So it's hard to feel bad for somebody that, you know, this or that. But anything that's relatable is what people spend money on. I think that is what worked for us this year.
What you said, the word patience, you're right, Dave. Mm-hmm. That's what's lacking in the business today, period. Across, you know, you mentioned about the investment of the guys in developmental, and then they get 15 seconds on the main stage, and someone makes a determination, well, they didn't connect with the fans, or this or that. And, you know, it's I feel I helped start one of the best workers in the damn business today, Nigel McGuinness, and he wasn't. You didn't know the minute he came into the gym the first time he was going to be a great worker. You didn't know that after the first year. It took him a while to develop and to mature. But, yes, I you know, my problem with the stories altogether, it's like you and I become partners at the head of the show, and at the end of the 2 hours we're mad at each other and we've already kicked each other's ass. Well, what's left? There's nothing to anticipate with that. And to me, part of everything we ever did over the years that made sense and drew money was due in great part to anticipation. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, anticipation is that. Why does the Super Bowl work? Because you wait all year for it. They don't have two Super Bowls. They have one. They have one World Series. It's and I'm not, and you know, well, you have to have pay-per-views every month. Why does UFC work? Because Brock Lesnar fought two times last year. You know, I can point to the downfall of WWE buy rates to when they put the brands back together in 2007, and Edge and Undertaker, as an example, went from working once every 2 or 3 months to every month, and they were working against each other for 3 months in a row. So I know that first pay-per-view match they're going to have, I'm conditioned to know that I'm going to get screwed, or it's going to be blown off. You know what I mean? So now John Cena went from fighting 8 pay-per-views or 9 pay-per-views a year to 14. You're going to burn through your attractions, and you're going to burn through stories. So there's no patience. There's no anticipation. You know, the John Cena, I thought they did the Nexus story right, because at least, you know, he didn't work every pay-per-view. You know, they built it up. But the fans have now know that I'm going to get screwed. And I'm not going to spend
right.
my money on that. There's only so much money I'm going to spend.
Yeah, you know, the whole thing with Cena coming back with a mask, I mean, that's been done, you know, the 51 years I've been in the business, it's been done, I don't know how many times. But to me, okay, first of all, if you want to make it effective, you leave him out. You don't bring him back the next week with a mask. You don't name him El Cena, for Christ's sake. You know, you try to – the whole idea is the heels don't know who he is, and everybody else in the world does. Been there, done that myself as a baby face with a mask. But let him be out for a while. Let him stay out for a while. Let the people anticipate, is he coming back? Let them actually believe maybe – there's a chance he's not. And you know, when I teach young guys today, I say, you know, okay, everybody's smart to the business. To some degree, everybody is smart to our business. What do you have at your disposal, which is the most important weapon in your arsenal, is called surprise. Mm-hmm. And I don't see it. I mean, well, you know, and like you're saying, how many times, but I think part of it is, too, when you give away cage matches and Falls Count Anywhere matches and this match and that match and this stipulation on free television, why do I have to pay to see it? You've already, you know, it's one of the examples that I use a lot of times is as great as Flair and Steamboat were in their prime, at some point they had to be pulled out of each city they were ever in because if you didn't pull them out, you were going to burn them out.
Mm-hmm. Attractions, you know, the people, things have shelf life. So I said this the other day. John Cena now has been on top the same amount of time of two people combined, Rock and Steve Austin. Their top runs in WWE, I think, were 2 years, honestly, you know, the top drawing attractions. John's been on top 5 years. You know what I mean? And John's very talented, and he's the front part of that company, but they've never built anybody else to replace him. And, you know, they've had their chances. You know, to me, the time to turn Randy Orton was back when he punted Vince in the head because he was edgy, and they could have turned him, let's say, after the Triple H thing a little bit, but they waited a whole year. He was not relevant anymore. Austin was turned, I would say, 6 months too early, but it was the right time because people started the groundswell, and they were carrying him back. It was 97. You know what I mean? Like
right.
There was still money to draw with him as a heel, but – he at least there, but the people were starting to turn, and it's the always the analogy: the hotter the heel, the hotter the baby face. And the situation meant it because he had the right guy to work with in Bret Hart. You know what I mean? Bret Hart got WWE ready to have Steve Austin be their hero, but it all took time and patience.
Hey, David, I wanted to ask you about, obviously, with Ring of Honor TV coming up to an end in just a couple of months, I know that when the announcement came out that the deal was not going to be extended, it was mentioned that there was going to be a special, perhaps, this year on HDNet. What information, if any, can you give us on that, maybe a time frame when fans could expect that?
I have no information on it. Honestly, I don't know. You know, I don't know what the time frame is on it. I think the show ends April 4th, same day as Tough Enough, same day as after WrestleMania. I think hopefully it's going to happen in the year. That's that was kind of the timetable. So it won't be April 5th. It won't be May 5th. You know what I mean? Who knows when it'll be? But they were a great partner. Hey, they paid me for 2 years. You know what I mean? They gave me a job. You know, I was very appreciative of my time there. So it's right. Their airways. Whenever they feel like we deserve it, we will give it to them. You know what I mean? Like that's they really put Ring of Honor, I think, on a much bigger map, and gave them a bunch of eyeballs that they didn't have before. And now it's good because now before I knew what Ring of Honor was before I went to work there 2 years ago, but I think the exposure of adding guys that now let you check the brand out. You don't go to a Ring of Honor show and not love it. You know what I mean? I've never met anybody who's come to one of our shows and just not loved it. Now you might go, oh, well, there's no pyro, there's no this. Well, you go to see Vince to see the pyro. You know what I mean? You go to watch the Super Bowl to see pyro and all that stuff. But for Ring of Honor, and I coined this phrase last year, it all starts here because I love Les Thatcher, but I love Nigel McGuinness. He was hands down to me. If there was going to be a quote unquote Stone Cold Steve Austin of Ring of Honor, it was Nigel McGuinness. You know what I mean? If he would have been healthy and able to stay, he was the guy that people would get behind because it's real to him. You know what I mean? Like, and he, right. I met Nigel when he was, coming around the developmental system, and I wasn't horribly impressed when I first met him. But when I, came back in contact with him, after, all those years and he was in Ring of Honor, I had known the reputation he had in the ring, but it was his personality. And when he was hurt, he learned to do less, so to speak, and, how to cut promos. And we did some great stuff on TV that was him cutting promos, and he got more over doing that than working. And that's where you make money, is how you work the audience. And he was great at it. And I thought he is the perfect example of what Ring of Honor is here. So people get eyeballs on him and see what a character like that. They go to TNA, they go to WWE. That's what Ring of Honor will, I think, exist as a place for guys to get exposure and build the brand. We're not selling individual guys now. We're selling a brand. If you buy a ticket, it's going to be a great value, a great time, and you're going to get something special.
Well, I'm still convinced at this point that Ring of Honor is the best thing going in pro wrestling. Tell me this: what are the prospects that we do see Ring of Honor on TV again at some point?
Very hopeful, because I think the brand is strong. It's just finding the right partner. And Les will tell you how hard it is to find the right partner because of the quote-unquote stigma. But yet, everybody knows wrestling. So you just got to get them a product in front of them that blows their mind. It's different. You got to get somebody to come to a show and check it out. So it's a process. It took Ring of Honor 7 years to get on television. You know what I mean? So yeah. It could. I'm not going to say it's going to take 7 years, but I don't want to say there's a timetable. I'm obviously not going to talk about things that are discussed. You know what I mean? Because that's ridiculous. But this is the way the company is existing now. And the nice thing is, it's still an accessible product. There's internet pay-per-views. I would hear on a weekly basis, when are you going to get a better channel than HDNet? I want to watch Ring of Honor. Well, if you're Twittering at me, you have a computer, which means you can watch internet pay-per-views. So you have no excuse to say, I can't watch Ring of Honor, because the best shows, guess what, was accessible to a worldwide audience. So if you sit there with your arms folded, you know what I mean, you then say, well, I want Ring of Honor on Versus. Well, it's on your computer. You can buy the DVDs. You have to support a product for it to grow. It takes people speaking out and showing and putting it in numbers.
Absolutely. Hey, Dave, it's been a pleasure having you with us tonight, and I hope we can do this again in the future. And I do want to remind people before you get out of here to check out I Want Wrestling. Great stuff you've got coming out of there, and we're going to continue to post that stuff at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Anything you want to say before you get out?
No, I appreciate the time. Yeah, IWantWrestling.com. I said this the other day. There are no scoops. If you want scoops, go to scoops.scoops.scoops.com. I'm just giving my opinion and hopefully thought-provoking material and audio, text and stuff that, you know, at least it gives a voice to everybody. And that's all I want, is that I want people to have a voice and speak out what they want. You know what I mean? I'm very passionate about the wrestling I like, and I got to do it for 2 years with Ring of Honor, and I was very happy that I got to do it as a television product. I may never do wrestling television again. I might go do home and garden shows, but at least I will always have a place to express what I like from wrestling and what I want out of it.
All right, Dave, again, thanks for joining us tonight, and look forward to catching up with you again down the road, man.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks,
all right,
Dave.
Take care. All right, of course, Dave Lagana. Man, great interview, guys. I unfortunately had to leave there for a bit while you guys were online, but sounded great what I heard.
Well, Dave is always awesome to talk about, and the fact that, and, you know, we didn't even get into it. I know he's also, I think he extended out a little bit of a hand and helped out OVW when ROH went to tape there. The shows that are currently airing that were taped at Davis Arena in Louisville, I think PWG too, maybe as well. I know he's extended the handout of his help to some other people too, and having the website up, having the podcast now and everything too. He's just, you know, got a lot of good stories, you know, well-spoken, and just always a good interview no matter what it is.
Now, Les, tell us a little more about this this offer to be in the Battle Royal.
Well, it's just nothing to tell. I was Mike from High Spots, you know, was part of the Wrestle Reunion thing, and I had lunch with him when I was in Charlotte in August for, you know, the NWA Legends thing, and he said, would you be interested in doing something? And I thought we were talking about doing some roundtable stuff like they do on 24/7, you know, and which we had talked about doing, and he just couldn't coordinate it back in August. So I said, yeah, I'd love to come out and do that. So anyway, then when they contacted me again, back in, I'm trying to think, October maybe or whenever, you know, said, well, we need you to wrestle in the Battle Royal. I said, no, I don't think so. Well, you know, you may be in better shape than some of those guys. I said, well, I may be, and I plan to stay that way as well. You know, again, my health is good. Just the fact you asked me what I've been doing the last couple of weeks, one of the things is I got my annual physical, and some will regret the hearing this, but the doctor said I'm going to live, and you know, I'm in pretty good shape for an old man at 70 years of age. So, you know, I'm not going to throw a money number, you know, but I was offered a very, very nice piece of change, chunk of change to do it. And I said, man, you know, the money's very enticing, but no, I just, I used to go over the top rope with some regularity about 40 years ago, but I haven't done it in a long time, and I'm not really interested in doing it anytime soon, you know. And the other thing is, too, a lot of those guys are, you know, 10 years, 10, 15 years my junior, and I said, you know, the difference between age 60 and age 70 is 10 years, but in many ways it's light years, you know. And your timing's got to be off. Your balance is not what it was. And talking about me, I wouldn't want to take a chance of hurting somebody else either, if I were being clumsy or sloppy. And it just, you know, as much fun as it might have been to get in there and play with Terry and Roddy and Tito and whoever the hell else was in there, believe me, I would have enjoyed doing that at some point in time. This wasn't the right time. And like I said, had I have injured myself and had a couple of days stay in the hospital, or let's just say go under that top rope and screwed up and you know, broke my hip, you know, hit the floor or the edge of the apron or something, it wasn't enough money to cover my hospital stay or the fact that I'd have to been out of work for how many weeks, you know? So it just wasn't practical. I'm not knocking anybody for doing it, but I'm just saying, you know, Last time I was in the ring was in 03 with five kids that I trained. I did a little show at the HWA gym just after I'd sold the company, I worked, the kids, the five other kids worked, the lion's share of the match. I worked a little bit of it, and we had a good time, and that's fine. I'm done. It's over. And I have no, I don't have to be working to my 80s or to be 70, so I can say I worked, 10 different, decades or anything. It's just, it's no big deal. It would have been fun to go out there and be with everybody, but if that's what I had to do to get there, it just wasn't going to happen.
See, Rich, I demand you report this as Les didn't go because he didn't want to get thrown out. He was promised to win. He wanted to win.
Yeah. He insisted on going over. All right.
This way?
What's that?
You said somebody did report it that way?
No, he's telling me to go out and do that.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah,
Rich, you go out and fan the fires,
That'll be our lead story tomorrow. Anyway, no match worth spending $50 on WrestleMania, you say. So let's look at Against All Odds coming up this weekend with TNA. Anything worth a damn there? Nothing.
I don't even want to. Now I'll tell you the truth. I did not watch. I DVR'd Impact last week and got an email from a journalist friend of mine who went on a long rant about the lack of logic and common sense and so on and so on, and said, if you haven't seen it already, it might be wise help for your health not to watch it.
I'm really surprised because the TV ratings have been going up in the last few weeks.
Yeah.
And I can't for the life of me figure out why. Mike,
you're
a ratings guy.
I am, and to be honest, I don't know other than I guess there were some people that tuned in that, and again, football being over with, I think does play a part in some of that too, of people redoing their routines and things like that. I mean, there was Thursday night football and things like that, and it's, again, I don't know what it is. I guess, good on them that it is happening, and they've obviously, there's been some interest in overseeing who them was going to be and if anybody else was going to pop back out. But let's see it again this week, too. And again, it is growing a little bit, which, again, is good for them. But realistically, if none of those people, and it's gone up to, 1.3 or something like that, 1.4, If the 1.0 wasn't buying your pay-per-view to begin with, it's great to have more eyeballs. Again, nothing wrong with that at all, but if they're not going to spend any money, what's the point?
Yeah, Mike, you took the words out of right out of my mouth, because that's what I'm thinking too. I don't care if the ratings are 2.5, if it doesn't equate into buy rates, then Spike will love it, but it's of no value to the company itself.
Right. And so at this point, what's the latest on Sting, Mike? What do we know?
A whole lot of nothing. The name's been taken off the TNA website. He has not signed with either group. I mean, again, it would be tough for me under the circumstances this year with everything that he would not end up in WWE, but it's possible he could go and re-sign TNA, gets enough money to do it. He doesn't have to do too much or anything like that. I just think, and I can't remember when I talked about this, what show it was, but, nothing against Sting. I grew up on the guy. I remember him in Mid-South and growing up through Crockett and everything that took place. With that said, as time goes on, I don't think – this is about the peak, I think, of people wanting to see Sting back. I think if too many years go on after this, if he does come back for that one time of Sting is finally in WWE – I don't think it's going to matter. So I would strike while the iron is hot if I was both WWE and Sting. Take advantage of it now. Make some DVDs, out of it. Have the 24/7 dedicated to him. There's so many things you can do to utilize him that weekend and afterwards from a publicity point of view. And even as a TV character, I guess in small doses, but, again, I don't want to see Sting wrestle every week. I certainly don't want to see that. But, if you can somehow work him in. But for all the other things that, that have nothing to do with wrestling, I would definitely do it this year. I don't, honestly, I don't know how much longer that people are going to go. I mean, it's gotten a great buzz now. I don't think it's going to happen in the next couple of years.
All right. And I wanted to mention, obviously, Oliver Humperdinck's not doing well. Don't know if Les, if you've been in touch with him or anyone.
I sent him, some words of encouragement email wise. Haven't heard back from him. I'm hoping he'll be in Mobile next month. There's still a good chance of that. Hope I get a chance to see him down there. I don't know for sure. But, Hump's a good guy. And, I feel bad for him that this has come up. But I hope he deals with it well.
Now, have you? Are you guys getting ready for National Sputnik Monroe Day?
No. I didn't know there was... I heard somebody say something about that, but I'm assuming that's going to be in Memphis.
Yeah, March 24th, they're actually going to premiere the Memphis Heat movie. I believe it's called Memphis Heat. I can't think of the full name of it. But the trailer looks awesome, and I believe it's supposed to debut on the 24th at, and I'm drawing a blank here trying to pull up the story on the theater, but we've posted it at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. You can find it elsewhere. But the trailer, it looks like an awesome movie, at least, in terms of what they've done. The production's great. They've got Sputnik on film, so it's obvious that this has been in the works for a while.
Yeah, I saw a trailer. Fargo and among others is on there too. Yeah. I'd like to see that. But I don't think I'll drive down to Memphis for the day.
Well, that's just it. I got to think that at some, in some way, shape, or form, it's going to be a DVD that's going to make its way available. And
right.
At that point, yeah, definitely in on that.
And I'm really interested in reading Jericho's latest book too.
Yeah, hearing nothing but good stuff about that.
Because it's not published through WWE, so it'll be a little more telling, I would assume, than it would be otherwise.
And unless, of course, he is looking to make a return at some point.
Oh, even if he does, though, I think he's... I'm not saying he's bulletproof, but he's so good, and, they need him coming back every once in a while. With all due respect, far more than Chris Jericho needs WWE at this point. With him doing some stuff on ABC, he had that, short-lived game show thing after the ESPN announcers ones that they had, Breakout or whatever it was. He's been on VH1 doing a lot of those, on the I Love the Rock channel. I can't remember the metal show and appearing on their I Love the 80s stuff. And he's got the books and he's got his band and he's got outside interests and he is a good talking head. If somebody were to swipe him up and pop him on TV for a CNN segment and things like that. I mean, again, I'm not, going to jump in Jericho's camp. I'm not in his wallet or anything like that, but it would seem to me that Jericho, they don't have a choice. If he wants to do this stuff, well, that's just the way it's going to be if they want to ever use him again, because he's got enough stuff on the ball where he really doesn't need them. At least it doesn't seem to be that way.
Yeah, I think you're right. They need all the Chris Jerichos they can get their hands on. And so they shouldn't be too picky about what he says or doesn't say.
No, and look at Mick. I mean, because of the campaign, and granted it was because of the campaign too, but the fact that they promoted a book that was called, Countdown to Lockdown, and there was all that stuff there too. But, I mean, there are just guys like that, if times were good, maybe Vince would take out something more on them, but especially in times like this, there's nothing they can say.
Yeah, no, it's they... in fact, now there's a guy, it's too late, I think, to do anything, but if you'd have brought him back for one shot at WrestleMania, it might have helped, put some strength, some teeth into that card. Because there's a lot of good-looking young guys, but it's just, I don't know. They don't have the it factor, or at least it's not showing yet. And part of that comes back to what we were just discussing with Dave too, is when you take an individual's own personality away from them, no matter what you give them, they're not going to be as comfortable with it as they are in their own skin. And that's what's made all the big stars, with the exception of Cena and you know, some of the current guys who aren't necessarily what they are perceived as on television, or as the old saying goes, it's not them cranked up by times 10, you know. I think anybody they can get like that is a good deal. You know, you mentioned TNA. The one thing I do, again, not having been with you guys a couple weeks, I think the Rude, Storm, AJ, that turn, I think it was someone, maybe you anticipated a little bit, but it was a pretty fair surprise. And Rude as a babyface can be strong. I mean, as strong as anybody they got, I think, if they allow it. But then again, maybe he's been switched back and forth in too many different characters and been with the company too long to be as effective as if they were bringing him in, you know, or he'd only been there a year. I don't know. But again, though, the taint, if there's is that now we have 10,000 factions in that company. Go back to WWF or WWE, whatever the hell it was called at the time, when you had I call them the house painters because they wore all the white pants and shirts.
Oh, the Los Boricuas.
And the Motorcycle Gang and the Nation of Domination, and you had all those factions, and tell me how they drew. The silence is the answer to the question I was looking for.
And there you go. Hey, still got another couple of things we want to fit in here. I do want to mention, coming up this weekend, if you're within driving distance of Villarica, Georgia, you want to go check this out. The Ted Allen Memorial event will be held this weekend at the Bay Springs Middle School gym there in Villarica. Just to do a meet and greet would be awesome, but they've got a ton of matches. I'm going to try to read through some of these names here. Ted Oates, Joyce Grable, Charlie Smith, Ben Masters, Jimmy Powell, Bobby Simmons, Randy Rose, Pat Rose, Keith Steinborn, Brad Armstrong, Doug Summers, Bill DeMott, Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker, Cowboy Bob Kelly, Greg Brown, George South. All those are doing... and more are doing a meet and greet before the show. I believe that's scheduled to happen at about 5:00. And then you got Steve Lawler coming in, Joel Deaton, Billy Black, Lee Thomas coming back. Hadn't seen that name in a long time. Bambi, Peggy Lee, just a ton of people. Frankie Valentine, big name locally. Kyle Matthews, of course. Jimmy Rave. The list goes on and on. Go check it out. $12 ringside, $10 general admission. Children under 7 get in free. Proceeds from the ticket sales go to Ted Allen's mother and to the Gulf Coast Wrestlers Reunion. Proceeds from concessions will go to the school. So for more information on that, check out the upcoming events section at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, or you can email... mail at inpromotions, that's inpromotions.com. Looking forward to that.
I truly wish I could make that, honestly. I mean, never mind to see all those people, because I'll see a bunch of them in Mobile, but just to pay my respects to Teddy, because he was a hell of a guy and deserves the recognition he really does.
Absolutely. And now it's time to unveil the new segment we talked about. Working on a little fancy intro for you, Les, but for right now, you're just going to have me kind of going into it for the debut of The Road Less Traveled. Basically, every week we're going to dig back and talk about a topic. We're letting the listeners and website visitors email us in questions. You can do that at rich@GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com or rsr@GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. tonight, the topic of choice. Somebody had read an interview that you had done with us many years ago, and they wanted to hear you tell the story. It's a really long interview in print, so I can't really get people to the exact location of it, but it is one of the funniest stories. But it was basically about the period where you and Roger Kirby, basically, I guess, the cousins, and you were down in Mobile working the Gulf Coast area. But apparently there was a match where you guys had been working regularly with the Daltons, going back and forth over the tag team titles, and you'd been doing a lot of 60-minute Broadways and this, that, and the other. And apparently there was a show in Alexandria.
Okay.
Does that ring a bell?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Build it up and take us through it.
Well, yeah. When we went in down there, the whole deal was Kirby and I went in first and started the feud with the Daltons, or they started with us, whatever the deal was. That was, of course, Donnie Fargo, Jack Dalton, and Frank Dalton. And there was Johnny Long was there as Bob Dalton at the time, but left the territory for one reason or other, which escapes me now. So Bull Ramos was thrown into the mix as a third guy on the heel team, and then Dennis Hall, you know, the third cousin, came in after the first of the year. But, yeah, we had we were doing Broadways. In fact, I think there's a newspaper advertisement probably on my Facebook. It's out there somewhere that where we were. It was going to be a 90-minute time limit in Baton Rouge with two timekeepers. Because actually, to tell the story there, what happened in Baton Rouge was the timekeeper was cut. We were going an hour through, and the timekeeper was going to shave a couple minutes, and got frisky and shaved, I forget how many minutes, Kirby maybe remember, but maybe close to 10 minutes. And the hell of it was, there were fans keeping the time, because they thought it was a title match, and the Daltons were the champions at the time. So anyway, the fans raised such a fuss that Lee Fields decided, okay, we're going to come back with the two timekeepers and a 90-minute time limit. But we were working with these guys all over the territory. So anyway, we're going up to Alexandria, and we were going to work. The whole idea there was no finish, you know, to go through an hour. For some reason, again, which escapes me, our official referee didn't make the trip or had car trouble and didn't show up. And, again, for whatever reason, I don't even remember who was running the town, to be honest with you guys. But, I mean, they decided that they had actually a fan as a referee. I don't know, because the guy was a basketball referee or a football umpire or some damn reason. But anyway, so, of course, we're trying, you know, as you know, we call everything that then was called in the ring with the exception of finish, and we had no finish because we were going an hour through. And so it was rather difficult, but of course this guy was a Kirby and Thatcher fan, and he wasn't a Daltons fan. So we get down to this, you know, and went the full 60 minutes. And, so the timekeeper rings the bell, the match is over, and, you know, we're wanting five more minutes, and I'm part of the vocal on this as well as Kirby. And finally the guy says, okay, you get five more minutes, which we really didn't want. It was just, it was our way of showing we thought we had the Daltons beat, and it'd give us five more minutes, we were going to get a job done. So anyway, we go the next 5 minutes. And now Kirby thinks that's funny because this guy is a babyface referee and he's a mark. So Kirby asked for five more minutes. And the damn referee gave us five more minutes. So now we're at the 70-minute mark, right? And as we wind down with the second 5-minute overtime, I told Kirby, I said, if you ask for 5 minutes again, I'm going to turn on you. I'm going to kick you. We'll be here because we'd have been in Alexandria all night because this guy would have, you know, he wanted us to win, and he would have given us 5 minutes until somebody couldn't have stood up. But that's the whole Alexandria story in a nutshell.
And ultimately, didn't you end up going about 90 total or something like that?
Well, we ended up going 70. We went close to 90 in Baton Rouge in the match that was, you know, because we thought we needed to give the people, make up for the timekeeper cutting the time so short there. We had some great matches with those guys. Donnie Fargo is just such one of the such a hellacious worker. You know, when you talk about great workers, he doesn't get enough credit, but he was just a tremendous hand. Frank Dalton was a good worker too. And the six man's with Bull and when Dennis came in, as our partner, it was a good little territory. Some good hands there: Don Carson, Kenny Lucas, Bobby Fields, Danny Little Bear. That I can remember off the top of my head. Of course, Kelly. It was a good crew of guys, and it was a good little territory. We had that feud popping really, really, really good at one point. So,
yeah, I don't think you'd see too many people going 90 minutes these days. I don't think there's anybody that could.
I don't know if you can memorize a 90-minute match. I know I could.
Yeah. That's the biggest problem right there. I mean, yeah, if Brian Danielson, throw him in there with somebody, I'm sure they could do it. But, boy, most of these guys, it's absolutely impossible.
I'm going to go. Give me Brian and Nigel for 90.
There you go. I'll tell you, I mentioned calling it all in the ring and or memorizing a 90-minute match. I'll tell you a real quick funny story. I don't know if I told you or not. At Thanksgiving time, we were down in Maggie Valley. The guy's got a little gym down there in Waynesville. I ran into him at Kmart, and Ricky Morton was down there, was going to be down there. And he said, come on down. I said, yeah, because I hadn't seen Ricky in a while. So anyway, went down, and Ricky and I were working with some of the kids in the ring, and one of the kids was talking about a match he had upcoming, I guess like the following weekend or something, with a guy, and I don't remember the names, but anyway, this guy, he said he wrote out our match for us, and somebody said, well, let's see it. So the kid pulls out his paper, and this match is detailed. you do this, then I do this, then,
God.
Yeah, so Ricky,
move for move, right?
He's looking at Ricky. Yeah, absolutely, Ricky. And I won't use the profanity here that was uttered there. So anyway, Ricky says, "Somebody give me a pen." So at the bottom of this piece of paper, Morton writes, "This is effing BS," right? And signed Ricky Morton. He said, "You want to sign it too?" And I said, "Absolutely." So then I signed my name to it. So as far as I know, the kid took it back to the guy who wrote it and gave it to him.
Yeah, and the guy was probably dumb enough to think he'd just gotten a couple of autographs.
Probably. You know what? If you write a match out like that, that's what you should be doing anyway, getting autographs.
Sure. There you go. All right. Les, what you got to plug? You got any seminars coming up?
I don't have anything. I'd love to, though, guys. I'm sitting here in Cincinnati starving to death. I mean, I'm working, but no, I don't have anything coming up. Going to Mobile. I'm going back to Philadelphia. I know, but I'm not sure. We don't have a date locked in. Probably some of the guys listen to this show. I've heard from some guys down and around there on Facebook, and I don't do business on Facebook. I don't conduct business. I mean, I've had guys contact me on Facebook, and I'll say, well, I'll give them a Les at EPWT. I said, send me an email there, and I'd be more than happy to attach, the details of what I do and et cetera. But I just don't like conducting business on Facebook. So anyway, and then I don't hear from anybody. I don't know why, but, so if anybody's interested, Les at EPWT.com. And I would love to come down that way and do some work. And, of course, I am going to be in Mobile the 11th and 12th of March for the Gulf Coast reunion.
There you go. And, of course, Wrestling Weekly on Saturdays, right?
Wrestling Weekly on Saturdays and Thursdays with Mike Johnson on Insider. So,
What's that? Here with the what?
Here I started with the gruesome twosome on Wednesday night.
Mike, what you got coming up?
Just as always, she just got done recording a Adam Mike Big Audio Nightmare, which is up for the members of WrestlingObserver.com and the F4W Weekly Empire. And also, Brian Alvarez and I both took off for the Super Bowl last week. Me to watch it, Brian to think of anything else other than sports to watch. But we'll be back to that this coming Sunday. For details, usually check into the Wrestling Observer website at about 1 o'clock p.m. on Sunday. We usually take some phone calls and take some emails, and then the show will air at 4 o'clock on the Sports Byline Radio Network.
All right, and that's going to do it for us here tonight. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for news, notes, and radio information. We'll see you here again next week.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.